Welcome into episode 133 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside Jamie Eisner.
Hi.
And Craig Morgan.
That threw me off. I'm sorry. We're supposed to get silence from Jamie.
I'm Luke Lipinski.
No, I'm in a great mood today. You know why?
I think I do.
Because I'm going to ruin Chris's life.
How is that different than any other day?
That he now has a mic to verbally defend himself. So now I'm
Chris Schubert has a mic.
Chris Schubert is here. Yeah, is this a 1 week thing where he gets the mic?
Hopefully. I don't want to hear him any more than I already have to.
A little trial balloon here.
So this is a possibly a one and done for Chris Schubert, but he has the mic for a very specific reason. We're going to wrap up this bingo card situation. Before we do that, though, I just want to tell you that Lisa Dillman's going to join us later on in the show. We're going to kind of go through each division since we're at the All-Star break. And Lisa's going to come on and talk about the Pacific with us. It's become a pretty interesting division, actually, as the season has unfolded. She was going to join us.
Oh, boy.
Well, let's see. Craig called her an hour early. This is how you treat your guests, apparently, Craig. You tell them a specific time, and then you call them an hour early and just completely throw their entire day off. You want to defend yourself? That's why you have a mic.
There's really no defense of that. So
time zones are hard.
I will point out that Lisa Dillman writes for NHL.com and used to be the LA Times reporter, covered the Kings and the Ducks. She still covers both those teams, but she's sweeping around the region now, well-versed on that topic. And so we'll get some insights from her as we head into the All-Star break. But back to you, Luke.
Still based in LA, though.
Still based in LA. I think Huntington Beach, actually.
Oh, that's a pretty nice place to be based. And also, just for point of reference, Huntington Beach is an hour behind Phoenix, Arizona. So
for several months of the year.
Yes. Not all of the months of the year, but some
of the months of the year.
67% of us realized that before 10 minutes ago, and apparently the last 33% just figured it out.
Did you book the guest?
Is Chris even in this equation? Like, that's not how math works.
Did you book the guest?
I wasn't counting Chris.
Okay, good point. That's great.
Chris, you told me not to count him.
Now that you have a mic, Chris, can I ask how many guests has Luke booked for this show?
For this show?
For this show.
That's different.
Zero.
Thank you.
But how many have I called an hour early and inconvenienced them?
Zero.
Yes. All right. Checkmate. All right. Let's get to the bingo card. In case we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but we're going to
enough. We'll see.
We have so a while back we decided we should probably have a bingo card for some of the key phrases or topics we hit on this show too much, basically. And a reader, almost on cue, sent us a really good one. And so the way we did it, it's 5x5. There's a free space in the middle. We gave it directly to Chris Schubert, or as Jamie calls him,
leftovers.
And Chris's job was to check off the boxes as we organically hit them. We never looked, because if we knew, then obviously that would influence the game. That's
correct.
Not how bingo works.
We're not cheaters.
No.
We're a lot of things, but we're not cheaters.
We're a lot of things, probably even worse than cheaters, but we're not cheaters. So we're at this point now where, I don't know, it's been a few weeks. This was before the holidays, and we still haven't hit bingo. So there has been some skepticism on the part of Jamie Eisner, I would say, that maybe we are hitting some of these boxes and Chris just isn't giving us credit for them?
See, this is not so much an issue of the natty-hatty bingo as it is my just inherent distrust for Chris Schubert's ability to do his job properly. Mm. And we're going to put that to the test today because he's confident. He is very confident that he has done his job properly. We have said none of these things. We have not touched any of these topics yet. And he isn't just an outstanding citizen and the best producer that has ever produced anything. I, on the other hand, think he sucks. So one of us will be right.
Wow, it went there. Okay. Hey, Chris, do you remember what happened that 1 week you were out?
Yeah, the show was a dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you could hear it? Because I couldn't hear it.
That's true.
Who was producing us that week?
I believe that was Jamie Eisner.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I know one of the boxes, and I know it's definitely going to anger Jamie because I think maybe we did hit it. So
All right.
As it stands, we have not hit bingo. Chris, just go ahead and start reading the boxes that we left unchecked. And this is over like the last month and a half.
Yeah, so in any order you like, Chris.
But no, right. But start with the one that you showed
Enjoy
me last
your 15
week
minutes
after.
Of fame.
Okay, Toronto trade rumors was one of the boxes.
I mean, we've discussed Toronto trade rumors several times on the show.
Luke.
I know. Oh, hey, look whose phone's on. I knew that we hit that last week at
all
least.
All right. I will give you that.
How many times do we have to jokingly mention Austin Matthews and OEL or OEL being traded to Toronto? We've done that like several times. We did a whole show about this.
Do you guys hang out together outside of the podcast?
We do, actually. Okay. By the way, it's exactly like this, although Chris throws it back at me more. Oh, I don't know why when he gets in like the office, he's afraid.
Well, because he hasn't had a mic until today.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I'll give you that spot. You still don't have bingo.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Well, you're not really giving us that spot.
No, you're not giving us. We earned it.
Okay.
0 for 1. Great job,
Traveling Craig Morgan.
We might not have hit that one. No, we might not have got that one. All right, so you're not. All right, so one for two.
Montreal trading for a number one center talk.
Oh no,
that's very specific. We've tiptoed around that, but we haven't hit that. No. That's good.
And that was the Montreal one. We thought it was going to be about patches.
Yeah.
What's funny is we would have talked about both of those today, actually, but. The Toronto one and Montreal today.
Yeah. Well, we already talked about the Toronto one several times.
Possibly more than anything else on the card.
Yeah, we did, actually.
Yeah. Luke and Jamie talk to each other through Craig. You have not done that since we started the bingo card.
You guys have repaired your relationship.
Not on the air.
No, not on the air. We have done that via text message.
Yeah.
What is Vancouver doing?
Well, that's just implied at all times.
Yeah, they've just been so irrelevant lately. That's fair. All right.
Joe Quenneville, 2017 draft walkout. I'm disappointed in you, Craig.
Oh, yeah. We brought that up a lot,
but it's so specific. How am I going to bring it up now? How's that going to come
out? I'm the judge. You didn't hit it. You don't get the point.
Okay.
Avoiding an Ottawa discussion.
We've certainly done that. We've certainly said those words.
We maybe haven't verbalized them.
No, we have said the words.
If I gave you that one. That one's close.
When you give us that one.
Yeah, so you still don't get bingo.
Wow, this is
insane.
Is this a circle or is this like an actual...
Craig getting thanked for coffee. He brings in coffee every week. You have not once thanked him about coffee since I've been the producer.
Craig, thanks for the coffee today.
I have noticed that.
Well, to be fair, two of those weeks we didn't have to thank Craig.
Be honest, is this...
Because somebody bought us coffee.
Well, that's not my fault.
Craig actually,
every other week.
By the way, if you got that one, you still wouldn't have had bingo.
So, but to recap here, who books the guests?
You do.
Who buys the coffee?
You do.
Gotcha. Sometimes listeners. Okay. I've occasionally bought coffee.
And then the last one, Luke avoiding a Pens discussion.
Wait. When was that? Stop. When did you buy coffee?
I have absolutely bought coffee at least five times for this show. Craig's been in the car a couple times.
Five?
Yes, absolutely.
Five.
Definitely.
Oh, that's so challenging. Yes.
You've been in the car.
Can you bring your bank statements in next week?
I can.
Okay.
I run my own bank, though, so they're all going to be written in crayon.
So do they make numbers that low?
They don't. That's why I had to run my own bank. All right, so I would say as far as Chris has gone, there's really only the one that he missed.
But we didn't hit bingo either way.
Even if I gave you those two, you would still be short of bingo. Yes. That's so I will hand the card over, and you can take a look at what you missed. I gave you those two.
I'm not sure we could – is there any possible way that we could have got any more answers without getting a bingo?
We could have got Craig gets thanked for coffee and somehow still wouldn't have had bingo, and I think that's like the only way to fill out a bingo card.
I'm gonna take a photo of that, and actually you guys should just don't give me access to the Natty Hattie Twitter account.
With 18 of the 25 boxes full, we still don't have bingo. That says something about us and I would say society. All right, let's get into the All-Star break here, okay? Right. We are here. We're recording this on Friday. Games don't resume until next Tuesday. Locally, the team doesn't play again until next Thursday.
What was going on the back of this card, Chris? You're just drawing like boxes with dots in the middle of it? Is this some kind of...
Well, I was just so bored that you guys weren't getting bingo. I had to keep myself occupied.
Oh, so we're boring you now?
Yes.
Do we not entertain you, Chris?
You in particular do not entertain me.
I just try to inform you.
I think he's drawing what a bingo card would have looked like had we ever hit bingo. So you guys are both on record as saying you hate the All-Star weekend for no real reason.
I don't believe those are the exact words. I wouldn't be watching.
I don't think those were the words either.
You guys are both on record as saying you won't be watching.
You think you bought coffee five times, so I understand.
At least five times. You've been in the car. Now I will give Craig. He has driven me there, and then I've paid.
I bought coffee the least.
So that's
I
did, it. I think when I Luke it, buys, I still have to pay for the gas money and.
I've done it.
Drive him there. Yes. I have to chauffeur
him. We have to go to the Starbucks in Seattle.
2 miles away, is it?
At least. I would say maybe 2.1.
Yeah, okay. I've done it exactly twice.
All right. So you're behind the listener.
When it didn't involve the listener. No, me and the listeners are equal in the amount of coffee you brought.
That's fair. All right. Can we talk about the All-Star game now that we're 4 hours into the show?
You're going to make us do it anyway.
Well, sure. Do you just want to talk about the skills competition? We all agree if you could only watch one, you're watching the skills competition.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on board there.
What's your favorite event in the skills competition? I mean, let's just make this like a podcast run by a kindergartner. What's your favorite color? Who has your favorite jersey? And what's your favorite event?
I like the passing challenge, actually. I think that's my favorite. It reminds me of the Wayne Gretzky and Wally Gretzky drill, trying to put pucks in various zones.
I like fastest skater.
Yeah. The hardest shot's kind of gone. It's Shea Weber every year. Or it's Daniel Chara. I mean, it's the same two guys typically. Fast, and also that one.
I feel like that's the most competitive because you're staring. It's one versus one. You're staring at each other. You know you're going to get made fun of if you lose.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Should it be a lap that measures the fastest skater? Does
No, I would
go. Are people doing laps in the game?
No, I would just go like red line to red line.
Yeah, I think it should just be straightaway speed. I'd like to know who the fastest is.
Okay, but I would add this wrinkle of like, I want you standing on the goal line to center ice, back to the goal line, and then to the other goal line or something.
That works. Or like a lightning drill.
Or like starting with the puck behind the net, skating out with it. Like with stick and puck and try to skate to the other end and get to the net.
Well, then McDavid would win every single year.
Yeah, because he gets faster with the puck for some reason.
some reason that adds power to him. Craig is the one who put All-Star Game in the show rundown and now doesn't want to talk about it.
Well, it was just very brief. I mean, we talked about this last night. You may not remember that either. I think you're getting confused a lot, Luke.
Did I see you last night?
Are you going senile?
No. What, maybe? Huh? Who said that? the 3-on-3? You want to talk about your amazing format that will
We're going to read this word for word. Okay. I pimp my idea yet again while you guys roll your eyes verbally.
I think I've already verbally rolled my eyes.
So, go on.
All righty then.
I'm just going to have some of this coffee. Thanks, by the way, Craig.
Yeah, thanks for the coffee, Craig.
Chris, I want to pitch an idea to you.
Thanks for traveling to go get us coffee.
And not bringing up Ottawa when you got here.
Or Pittsburgh, Luke. Bingo.
We're going to hit bingo today.
So I've got this idea, Chris. For the All-Star game, since we've already gone to the 3-on-3 format, I don't think anybody cares about division versus division. Are we all in agreement there, by the way?
Correct. Yes. There's no divisional rivalry.
Pacific versus Central. How do you pimp that? I don't know. I'd like to see every team represented as long as we're doing this. And you have brackets. Maybe somebody gets a bye because we have 31 teams now. Soon to be 32, so I don't know how that works out.
Well, when you get 32
it's perfect, actually. Yeah. When we bring Seattle.
This is probably why they're expanding.
So we'll wait until Seattle comes on board, and then we'll go with this new format where every team sends 7 skaters and a goalie.
Okay.
For 3-on-3, and you do brackets all the way to the championship. Short games, obviously you don't want to play too long because you don't want to exhaust these guys.
Yeah, one period.
Yeah, one period. Like
even 10-minute period.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you have to do. See who wins, and then you just figure out a winner. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, the Coyotes would give up a goal in the final minute of the first 10 minutes, too.
And there you go. And it would only be 224 All-Stars at the event, so that should be...
Well, there's a cost element here, but I think they can afford it.
I like the idea in theory. I just don't know how it would ever work.
They'll never do it, but I like the idea.
Of course they won't do it.
Like that's something I would like to see in the summer or something, but I mean, you're never going to be able to do it then either. You're never going to be able to get that many players to sign off on missing their break. And
let's do it outdoors, too.
In the summer. No?
No.
On one of those like plastic rinks that simulates the feel of ice.
Yeah.
It'd be like skating in Brooklyn.
I'll just add to your statement that nobody cares about the division rivalries. I'll just once again reiterate that we should be still drafting the 4 teams. I know I've said that the last 2 shows. I'd be a lot more interested in the actual game itself if these were 4 teams that were drafted by the actual players.
Luke, are you going to televise the draft?
I would televise the draft. Why? I mean, this is not the NBA. I would absolutely televise the best part.
I can't believe they did not televise that draft.
For a league that is so good at marketing their product.
They don't make mistakes like this very often. This was a big missed opportunity.
That was the most obvious thing. And the NHL, every year they've had the draft, they have absolutely marketed
it. Yes, and they gave them booze. I'm sorry, they didn't. That was water in those cups. They're just very jovial and saying whatever they want and cursing because.
Jovial is the word of the day.
Jovial.
So far.
Craig wants to talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson's red carpet plans.
I don't really. I just want to... The red carpet is like as big a deal as anything at the All-Star game now, isn't it?
Yes.
For the fans, for the crowd, it is, actually. There are huge crowds that swell around the red carpet and expect... I don't know what they expect. OEL told me 2 days ago everybody expects him to look good, like look GQ. So he's thinking of going the other direction this year.
You should dress like Harry Potter again.
He's thinking like jeans and a t-shirt.
It would be hilarious, actually, if he did that. It would be pretty great.
Swedish cowboy.
Just an OEL hat walking down the red
carpet. Just OEL hat and the OEL underwear, that's it. Just all his own products.
I don't know how that would work.
It would get attention.
It would absolutely get attention. Let's start going around some of these divisions then, shall we?
Okay. By the way, as we start this, to recap, we're going to take a look at each one of the divisions, how they shape up heading into the All-Star break, dive into the teams a little bit. But one thing that jumps out at me, where are the big markets? New York, Chicago, L.A. could all be out of the playoffs this year.
Yeah. You know what? That's a pretty good spot to start because I'm not one of those people that buys into like the Super Bowl needs to be a certain matchup. Everybody watches the Super Bowl or they don't. Nobody would have cared if it was Jacksonville playing whoever. I mean, people are going to watch the Super Bowl. And people are going to watch the Stanley Cup. If you're going to watch it, you're going to watch it. I don't think anybody's like, well, Nashville's in it, and really we need it to be Montreal if we're going to watch. But you want some of these markets in the playoffs at least.
Yeah. Right now, if you look at the standings right now, the Rangers and the Islanders are out of the playoff picture. The LA Kings and the Anaheim Ducks are out of the playoff picture. The Chicago Blackhawks are out of the playoff picture. That's crazy. First of all, when you think about what the Kings and Blackhawks in particular have done, and even the Rangers, even though they haven't won, they've gone deep in the playoffs a lot recently. None of those teams are in the playoffs right now, and there's a good chance that all three of those teams that I just mentioned will not be in the playoffs when the season ends. I don't think that's good for the game, to be honest.
It's certainly not good for TV ratings. I'm sure NBC's not very thrilled.
Yeah, seriously, when you look at the Central right now, look at the three markets that are at the top. Now, Nashville may be some other thing because I think at least the hockey world fell in love a little bit with Nashville last season. But Winnipeg, Nashville, St. Louis, those are small markets at the top of the Central Division. So that's probably not great for ratings overall. Certainly not Winnipeg.
And Pacific right now, Vegas, San Jose, Calgary, not exactly huge markets either. I have no idea what the Vegas TV market for that team looks like. I haven't seen ratings from that market.
Neither have I, actually. I'd be curious to see that.
That is crazy, though. If you just look in the Western Conference of those eight teams that are in the playoffs, strictly from a ratings or market share, which one of those teams is best for the NHL? Is it Vegas that's actually in the playoffs right now?
The probably teams? Just because of the national allure of that team right now, but if you're talking the market itself, I mean, I don't know.
Dallas?
Maybe Dallas.
Vegas,
yeah,
I wonder how much Vegas success is going to be used as leverage against cities like Seattle and Houston, saying, well, look at what Vegas did. You could have a winner right away.
Insta success. So, by the way, that's going to cost you an extra $150 million.
No big deal. We should hit on the All-Star replacements, too, before we actually get into
this
division.
Do we have to?
Should we?
Well, Brian Boyle, I think, that's a pretty cool story.
Yeah,
it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Mike Smith.
Somebody wrote that story.
Did they?
Yeah. Somebody.
Hey, I read one of your stories yesterday.
Did you?
By the way, Craig's
I think I forced you to, though.
Craig's on fire the last 2 days, content-wise.
Wow. I don't know if I like Jamie building up Craig.
Back-to-back star stories. You should, step your game up, Lou.
I know my limits.
When we talk about the Metro here in a little bit, we should talk about that Tortorella story.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
That you were apparently forced to read.
Let's just
are
build
we starting
Craig
with
up.
The Metro here?
We can start with the Metro. Seems also, like Mike Smith is in the All-Star game as well.
He's had a strong season, particularly after the first month.
Mm-hmm.
He really has, because I was actually looking at Antti Raanta's stats for January, because he's been pretty good in January, and trying to see how they compare to the rest of the league, and they compare pretty favorably, except Mike Smith is actually having a better month of January, and that's probably why Calgary's in a playoff spot right now.
Maybe when Calgary actually comes here and plays the Coyotes in Arizona, I can do that story.
There you go.
Someday. When do the Flames come? Like March or
something? Is it going to be like Minnesota last year where their first trip was the last day of the season?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, let's start in the Metro. So how do you want to present this? The top three right now are Washington, Columbus, and Pittsburgh, and they would get two wild cards. As we hit the All-Star break, New Jersey and Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's lays it out. And then obviously the teams that are in trouble, we mentioned both of the New York teams. And you can't even say they're in trouble yet because they're right on the bubble right now. Even Carolina has a shot, I guess, at this point. So the entire Metro is incredibly competitive, probably the most competitive division in hockey. But when you look at this division, a couple things jump out for me. New Jersey had such a great start to the season. They were on top of the division. They've been sliding a little bit. They've lost four straight. They're sitting in a wild card spot right now. I know we talked about this. I think when we hit the halfway point of the season, they were one of the storylines for us to watch and whether they could sustain that great start, because it's an exciting team. There are a lot of good things happening there, but New Jersey's in a little bit of trouble right now because there is a tightly packed bunch there that and a few teams could just knock them out.
Well, and they've won two games since December 27th. So they've won two of their last 12. It's remarkable they're still in a playoff spot, really.
Yeah, they're the team I'm most concerned about. Philadelphia, I look at, I wonder if this is the best they can do. Because their secondary scoring has been very limited. Giroux and Voracek can't play better. I am not sure it's possible they can actually play better than they
neither
have.
Neither can Couturier.
Yeah, that's been an incredible
as well.
Line, yeah.
So is this just, do they have enough? Is this a team that needs to buy multiple pieces at the deadline? I mean, otherwise, they could be a second wild card team, but I don't see where this next step for them is going to come.
Has Couturier overachieved more than anybody in the NHL this year?
Yeah. I don't know if that's even fair. You know, there are a lot of people there that thought he was an underrated player. And listen, playing between those two guys, it probably helps. And he certainly benefited them as well because neither one of them were producing at a level that they expected, especially with those contracts. But I don't know. I think playing between such talented players has helped him a great deal, but maybe we're just getting a better sense of the type of player that he really is.
Yeah, I mean, Pat Maroon plays with good players too. Yeah, that's true.
Has anybody in the entire NHL benefited more from playing with great players than Patrick Maroon?
It's remarkable.
Not in the last 10 years. Maybe the better way to phrase it with Couturier then is, has anybody exceeded expectations more specifically this season? And you're right, Craig. I know that internally for the Flyers, they've had high expectations for him. He's been a very good defensive forward over the course of his career. But he's got 26 goals right now. I mean, we're talking up in the Alex Ovechkin, Nikita Kucherov range for a guy that up until this point in his career really has not just, but predominantly been a defensive forward.
Him, maybe Josh Bailey with the season he's been having.
Yeah,
I think those are the two that, I mean, Matthew Barzal. I mean, I know we're not talking rookies, but he has been unbelievable.
Yeah. To go back to your point, Jamie, I mean, some of their young players, I mean, you still have Wayne Simmonds on this roster who I know isn't having a great year by his standards, but I still like the player. There are some young players that they probably need to take a step up. Travis Konechny isn't having the same kind of season he had last year. So if you can get some production from those young guys, but yeah, maybe this is a situation where you need to add a veteran scorer to try and give yourself some more secondary scoring. Nolan Patrick, I mean,
invisible,
yeah,
completely invisible.
Also a rookie.
Should he be here? Would he be better served somewhere else?
I'm a little surprised because now they're inching up to, I believe, the waiver eligibility deadline with him. I'm a little surprised, but. I don't necessarily think it portends negative things for his future at this point, but he has not been an impact player.
Yeah, and when he came out in the draft, everybody thought he was the most NHL-ready of all the players.
Yeah, and I didn't think he was going to score 60 points this year, but he's got 9.
Yeah, he's got 3 goals.
Like, he should be in that 40-ish something points by the end of the season spot, and he's getting enough time.
One last thing on Couturier's career high in goals was 15. He's on pace for 44.
Okay. Right now.
So that's a jump. And
what's his contract situation, by the way?
Oh, I can pull that up in a second.
Also, Yuri Laterra continues to never be productive. That's remarkable to me.
In my mind, Couturier is the reason Philadelphia's even in a playoff spot. Because you guys are right, Voracek and Giroux, they basically do this every year, and they miss the playoffs every year.
But they struggled last year a little bit to do that, and Giroux might have the best year of his career this year.
And that's
better than the year where everyone declared he was better than Crosby. Remember that?
Yeah, that went well. They're 1 point ahead of the Rangers and the Islanders for a playoff spot right now.
Couturier is under contract for 4 more seasons after this season at 4.3.
That's a good deal.
Wow, that's a good contract if he does anything close to this over the next couple seasons.
They have $9.7 million tied up right now in Filppula and Laterra.
Oops.
All right, we just saw Columbus here in person last night, and Craig got to talk to John Tortorella. Jamie and I talked to him at the press conference and around the award show over the summer. Craig, what can you tell us?
One of my favorite interviews of my entire professional career, actually. Wow. I can tell you that. And I'm not. That's not hyperbole. John Tortorella left the Coyotes the year before I started covering the team. He left in 99. Well, the entire coaching staff was dumped. He coached under Jim Schoenfeld. They lost in 7 games to St. Louis, if you remember that great playoff series. But I started covering the team next year. So, you know, I talked to a lot of people about him. I obviously knew a lot of the people that knew him, but I had zero relationship with John Tortorella. And yesterday, I just requested an interview with him. They got me a one-on-one with him, and it was really going to be about the Phoenix years. And that's where we started the interview. And then he took it in an entirely different direction than I expected, started talking about, you know, his reputation, his mistakes of his past. And I can't remember a more candid interview, specifically with a guy that I don't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's talking to a reporter that he really trusts and knows, okay, I get that a little bit. But, I mean, he just opened up to me, and it was remarkable. It was insightful, it was candid, and it was articulate. And listen, I know I'm pimping my own story here, but go and read just the quotes from John Tortorella in that story when he talks about the mistakes he's made, what he's trying to do. I mean, he is just blunt, honest with.
Yeah, and that was the thing that caught me. Like, just how candid he was. It felt like I'm retiring, so here's my.
Right.
I want to reflect back on my life. I won't give it away too much because I'd like people to read the story, so I can feed myself and Craig can feed his kids. But there's a Shane Doan story in there as well.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I think for the Coyotes fans that are listening, which I know there are a lot of, it's a really good Shane Doan story in there as well. It was a remarkably candid interview. I really enjoyed reading it. And, you know, we get a little bit of a glimpse of that personality at the award show because there is there's not a lot of pressure. You know, he's not being asked questions about the game. His emotion level is, as he talked about in the story, he has a different emotion level, win or loss, right after a game. So you kind of get a glimpse into the lighter side of Tortorella when we've talked to him in Vegas.
He seemed like he was almost humbled in Vegas too. I mean, if you look at the way his career has gone, where, you know, he was one of the best coaches in the NHL, and then people seem to get tired of his act or his attitude or whatever you want to call it. It's not an act. I mean, that's just sort of the way he is. Yeah. But then for him to remember, he was not like it seemed like he was done, but it really seemed like his days of being one of the top coaches in the league might be over, because that style only works so long with a team before you burn your players out and you have to move on. But, you know, Columbus ends up moving on from their previous coach and going to Tortorella early in the season. What was that now? Basically 2 years, three seasons ago. And last year, I mean, he had them as one of the top teams in the NHL. He wins the Jack Adams. And, yeah, when we were at the awards show, you could tell he was almost sort of overcome by the fact that he had climbed his way back up. I remember talking to Nick Foligno separately, and he attributed 90% of Columbus's success last year to Tortorella.
I forgot about that. Yeah, he was, I mean, very sincerely.
Very much.
My success is because of John Tortorella.
And, you know, you talk about a style burning out after a while, but I don't want it portrayed as John Tortorella being like Mike Keenan. The thing that he stressed, and that all the players that I talked to that played for him stressed, he has relationships with his players. It is clear that he cares about them, that he'll go to the wall for them, and that's behind a lot of these blow-ups that he has. He's protecting his players, so that goes a long way with players. Funny part of that story is I asked, okay, so when you go to the podium and you don't want to say anything, is that because you don't want to crush your players? You just would rather say nothing than blasting them, and that's your way of handling it rather than lashing out at reporters like you did with Larry Brooks? He said, well, sometimes it's that. Sometimes I'm just being an ass. Okay.
Well, that was another thing Foligno said, too. It wasn't just Tortorella's coaching ability. It was his ability to listen to his players and learn from his players, which I don't know that he was necessarily doing earlier in his career. But and look, what he was doing earlier was working, but he is definitely one of the coaches that has evolved and changed as the game is changing here over the last couple of years. Look, Craig's story is good enough where I actually read it, so you probably should go click on it.
There's a seal of approval.
Yeah.
And again, I'm sure that resonates with different players different ways. There are certain players, I'm sure, gravitate toward that, and they want that tough love structure, and some players that it really bothers them. And that doesn't say anything. It just, there are different personalities now you deal with them, and I think that's why he's become this polarizing figure.
Just so we don't go through every team in the NHL and have this take 6 hours, Washington and Pittsburgh, let's kind of lump them together here since Crosby and Ovechkin both hit milestones recently. Washington in particular is just doing what they do in December and January and February. They've moved right up to the top of the Metro Division. They're one of the best teams in hockey. Do we sense anything different coming up in April and May, or is this just par for the course?
My prediction, pain. I don't see this going well for the Caps. I don't think they're as good a team as they were last year.
No.
I mean, I give them props, and I don't know how much of this to throw on Barry Trotz and how much just throw on the fact that Washington does this every year. They're a really good regular season team. I don't know. I mean, they may not have to worry about Pittsburgh. I don't see Pittsburgh recapturing that magic this year. So when you talk about teams that they have to worry about, who are we highlighting right now? Columbus has had its own struggles. Maybe it's more, you know, the Atlantic Division that they have to worry about, so maybe they can get to the conference final.
That's what I think, because we talk about Washington not being as good a team as last year. I don't think Pittsburgh or Columbus are as good as they were last year either. All three teams at the top are, they're good, but they're not as good as they were.
Well, and to put it in context, you know, Washington's got 63 points. Columbus and Pittsburgh each have 57. The two teams behind them have 56. The two teams behind them have 55. So when we say Columbus and Pittsburgh are up there at the top two, they're basically in a six-team race for, what, four spots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So nobody's safe other than Washington, I would say. Pittsburgh's won seven of their last nine at least, but they're also playing Casey DeSmith in goal because they don't have Matt Murray, and Christian Jarry was kind of up and down. So, and Columbus, I mean, I know they won when they were here last night. They don't look all that impressive right now.
They really don't, and I thought the same. When you talk about the territorial game last night, the Coyotes controlled play. That first period, I thought the Coyotes dominated that first period. I mean, it's especially like the probably the first three quarters of that period, almost all of it was played in Columbus' zone. The Coyotes just can't score. They're just not finding a way to score consistently enough. But they are playing a much better territorial game in Columbus, really. I mean, when you watch the team that they had last year, you wondered where that magic was. And I know Cam Atkinson just came back last night, but he hasn't had a very good season. Wennberg hasn't had a very good season. They've had a lot of guys drop off. Boone Jenner. I mean, they're just not getting much. The only line that just jumped out at me last night for Columbus was that top line. And Artemi Panarin is just, he's a wonder to watch.
And
but
even though he wasn't the same player as he is now last year, they missed William Karlsson a bit in their secondary scoring.
Yeah, they could.
Now he's a star, but he wasn't that for them last year, but he was still pretty good.
And he's in a great spot. I mean, I think that's one of those situations where if he had stayed on Columbus, he probably wouldn't be putting up the numbers he is putting up. Just to,
but, by the way, too, that Hail Mary pass from Shea Theodore to William Karlsson a couple nights ago was a thing of beauty.
Anything that team does works at this point. Columbus is 29th in the NHL in goals per game. Yeah. So that's
not great.
They don't really. Like that's what sort of struck me watching that game last night. And Craig, you said it, the Coyotes' defense has been a lot better lately, but I just couldn't even imagine a way Columbus would get a quality shot off. And that's not all the Coyotes. They don't seem to have nearly as many weapons.
Mm-hmm.
You'll appreciate this too, talking to Niklas Hjalmarsson before the game. He had the highest praise I've heard a player have for a player on another team for Artemi Panarin. Like he broke down all the different ways that Panarin can burn you in a game. And credit to the Coyotes, they didn't let him do any of them. But
credit to Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah,
I don't know if people were zeroing in on that last night, but his assignment was Artemi Panarin, and he shut him down.
Didn't even
there was one play
Panarin.
In particular where Panarin had space on a rush coming up the left wing. There was a lot of ice, and EL closed the gap so fast. And he got physical with him, too. And I think that's what led to that scrap in front of the net. He just took Panarin out of the game. I mean, you can't stop Panarin from skating, showing off his speed. But in terms of offensive chances, Panarin had nothing last night.
I think that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, too. Like, you'll watch a player, and I'm not trying to take away from Panarin, but like you just said, he's going to make some flashy moves. And if you're just watching the game, you'll be like, oh, that guy's really good. And it's true. Panarin's a good player. But there are other players around the league that you'll see make flashy moves but never actually get a quality shot on goal or make a play with them, or they'll disappear for 2 or 3 months at a time. And that does nothing for you as a team. Like, you need guys that can actually get to the net and make plays. Panarin is one of those guys. So if you're a defenseman like Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you're fine if he wants to go make those fancy moves around the perimeter. He was never a threat to do anything to the Coyotes last night, and that is 99% because of OEL.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I know he got criticism when he got voted to the All-Star game, but he's been, the Coyotes' best player since that happened, and he took it upon himself to
at least
really
the last five games, right? He's just been, I think he's been terrific.
He looks like vintage OEL right now.
Yeah.
He's got to keep it up for the whole second half of the season, but you see him play like this, and you think back to 2 years ago, and you're like, this guy could be a top five if at least at least top 10, if not top 5 defenseman in the NHL if he can do it consistently.
And you know as well as I do still, and all the trade rumors are never going to stop, you ask every GM in the league which player they want off the Coyotes, he's the guy.
Oh, they'll line up.
All 30 of them will say Oliver Ekman-Larsson. All 30 of them.
And now he's showing why. You know, a month ago he wasn't, but he's kind of reminding everybody now. Do we want to hit the Atlantic Division?
Let's. It's kind of haves and have-nots, or as I described it, Trump's vision for America, a wide divide between the haves and have-nots.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
So send your mail to Craig Morgan.
Go ahead.
Send your coffee gift cards to me and Jamie, but your hate mail to Craig Morgan.
Yeah.
This is the most boring division in hockey. It's not even close.
It really is, because there's no intrigue here.
Yes.
Until the playoffs. I would be very intrigued by
Boston, Toronto will be fun.
Tampa Bay, those three teams
Tampa
are going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And nobody else from this division is making the playoffs.
Yeah, you and I have to eat a little crow here.
We do?
Yeah, on Sergachev. Because we about 3 episodes ago, we handed him the Calder. And
No. We said he was a finalist. We wouldn't have handled him.
No, but
him
I meant
Calder.
But we pretty much said how much we loved him.
And I still do.
And I still do, too, but he's been a healthy scratch like twice since
then. Yeah, but he was never going to beat Besser or Barzal
No, nobody's beating Barzal now.
No.
Period.
But
I mean, unless Barzal tears an ACL tomorrow night, which is like walking.
And even then,
by the way, he's gonna be in that All-Star game, I think.
Barzal,
yeah.
Oh,
I think he's gonna be an emergency replacement.
He deserves it.
He needs to be a pretty good year.
He needs to be.
We got a chance to see him too, and his skill is ridiculous. The way he can change directions in a small amount of space.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's,
I'm trying to think who it reminds me of. I mean, you know, Patrick Kane is like one of his idols too, but he doesn't play the same position. But
no,
in terms of that sort of change of direction in a tight space, you'll love this. Dennis Savard is the guy it reminds me of. Just can do so much in a tight space. It's remarkable.
Watching him in 3-on-3 overtime is a treat.
Oh,
yeah. It's just a treat. He never loses the puck.
Yep.
And he keeps – teams are getting smarter with that too, by the way. We are seeing teams possess the puck in 3-on-3
a lot
that? Better.
Because I know I've talked to a few people around the game who hate it. They're just like, now it feels like basketball.
It's not as exciting, but their job isn't to be exciting. Their job is to win the game.
No, it's the right thing to do. But is this a case of coaches ruining 3-on-3? Not ruining, but sort of taking some of the fun out of it?
To quote a coach, a local Valley coach, you play to win the game.
Oh, boy. Okay. How many times are you going to reference Herm Edwards on this show?
Choo-choo.
Anything else in the Atlantic?
Are we in agreement that Boston is the best story in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I would agree.
Nobody saw it coming.
Because they're the only real surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the teams that are not going to make the playoffs in this division, and this is not me speculating or trying to make some prediction. These teams, they're not mathematically out yet, but they're close.
But they are. Detroit, I've eliminated them in my mind.
Detroit, Montreal, Florida, Ottawa, and Buffalo, a who's who of teams that Jamie has hated for a while now.
Yeah, I wonder why.
They're all out. Florida?
I just hate
the way they treated Gerard Gallant.
He used to love Florida.
I don't understand. There's too much talent on that team. There's too much talent on that team that's being wasted.
Yeah.
And
will the Leafs add a D? Oh, look at that. I had a trade question about the Maple Leafs on today's agenda.
Interesting.
Wonder if that would have checked the box. I don't know.
No, apparently OEL for Austin Matthews was not enough. We didn't use high-profile enough players to talk about that scenario. Right, Chris?
Chris is squeezing his stress ball right now.
Yeah. It's got Jamie's face on it, too. It's very, he just drew it on there.
It's Fred Wilpon's face.
I have the power to mute you, just so you know.
Oh, you haven't exercised that power yet?
I know. I'm shocked.
50 episodes?
I have a power to mute the whole show when you were gone, so.
Yeah, and you did exercise your power. Montreal, what are they doing at the trade deadline? Are we going to see them finally start moving some pieces?
I'm not convinced. I don't know.
They should. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing, period.
What are you selling to the fan base?
At least they got Shea Weber.
Well, hold on, though. I mean, if you're Montreal...
You just gave up 6 goals to Carolina.
Yeah, that's a problem. If you are Montreal, what are you doing at the trade deadline? To put this in context, they're 15 points
out of the trade deadline or in the offseason?
At the trade deadline. Why aren't you moving some guys away?
Yes, I'm selling.
I'm firing my GM.
Did I say that?
Yeah. Somebody did.
But I'm not selling the guys I think they're going to sell, which is like Galchenyuk and Pacioretty. Like, those guys aren't going anywhere.
You really think they're going to move Pacioretty?
He just said he doesn't think they're going to.
So I don't think they're going to.
Oh, those are the guys you
do you
would
guys
move,
need to go through me again? Do you need a
Craig,
interpreter?
Can you tell Luke
do you need an interpreter
to let me finish
for English?
My point?
Okay.
You said they're not going to move the guys you think they should move.
Yes.
And then he said they're not going to move Galchenyuk or Pacioretty.
So you think they should move Pacioretty?
I think they are so far away from being true contenders that they need to do some sort of a
Toronto rebuild.
Yes.
Embrace it. Recognize that you're not going anywhere.
For better or worse, you have your goaltender forever.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
But again,
it's death do you part.
But it's possible that Carey Price has a very strong season next year or 2 years from now.
Goalies can play well later in their careers,
yeah,
too. We've seen that.
I mean, remember when Henrik Lundqvist was dead last year and they couldn't believe Ronta wasn't going to be there long
only
term?
Because he played in New York, I'm convinced.
And in Montreal, they wouldn't do the same thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm
or Toronto.
I haven't really heard from many Montreal fans this year. It's like they're almost just vetoing the entire season. But you have Carey Price having an off year. Even if he has a great year next year, I don't understand how this team is... I don't understand how this division's any different next year. It's going to be the same three teams near the top, and if somebody else crawls into the top, it's not going to be Montreal the way they're set up.
No, the only team that I could see crawling into the top is Florida if they ever get it together. I mean, I still don't know what's going to happen with Erik Karlsson. By the way, Ottawa, it is so apparent that the players do not like the owner now. I don't know where you go with that situation.
Yeah.
Who wants to come there? Because that stuff leaks out to all other free agents. Everybody knows now.
Well, they got Magnus Pajarvi off waiver, so everything's all good now.
That's a real problem up there.
If you're just going to go down the path of, hey, we'll just trade away our unrestricted free agents and get some great pieces and rebuild on the fly, that you're looking at Montreal trading away Thomas Plekanec and Alish Hemsky. So I don't think you're going to really spark a rebuild
with
that.
You got to trade those other guys.
They're not going to, but
they should.
You have to blow this up.
I mean, if you're trading PK Subban, then course, you should have gotten something.
Yeah, that's where things started to go downhill, isn't it?
You think?
Yeah. What an odd.
Well, things went downhill when they never supplemented their top line.
They started going downhill when like Chris Chelios retired.
They were at least in the playoffs a couple years though. After that,
they're the last Canadian team to win a cup, still, right?
Yes, but that was decades ago. Are you going to sing the song for us?
No.
Are you going to sing it when all the Canadian teams have been eliminated this year?
I could, if you'd like to. I feel like I owe the audience a better version because I wasn't on my A game. It was really like a C game that day.
That was also 2 years ago, so we should probably explain what we're talking about. Craig singing O Canada, except singing No Canada to the tune of O Canada when no Canadian teams made the playoffs.
Yes.
And just...
That was a special circumstance, though, because it hadn't happened. It had only happened once in the history of the NHL, and it was way back when there were like, I think it was two or three teams.
Yeah, we're going to have Canadian teams make the playoffs this year, but not as many as you would expect. What are we looking at? Toronto and Winnipeg and maybe Calgary?
Yeah. I mean,
Toronto and Winnipeg are going to make the playoffs.
Yes. Yeah.
But I would have expected more than two. Like, if Calgary misses...
Yeah, well, that's a nice segue to the Western Conference, right, Luke. So let's talk about the Central Division before we bring in Lisa Dillman, when we're supposed to call her and not when we actually called her.
We should call her an hour late now.
So top three, Winnipeg, Nashville, St. Louis, those big markets we were talking about earlier. The wild card spot, Dallas and Colorado.
And Jonathan Bernier has been excellent.
Jonathan Bernier and Nathan McKinnon, is a Hart Trophy finalist right now.
Non-linear progression of young players. I will beat the table with it. That is my theme of the year, is non-linear progression for young players. Don't give up on 20-something-year-olds because they had one bad season.
Hmm. Duclair. Anthony Duclair had 4 points last – or 3 points last night?
Three.
Just saying.
But he really – he worked the system pretty well. He had two bye weeks and an all-star break in the same month.
Well, you know.
But he had a bye week in Phoenix, too.
That's what I'm saying. He had a bye week for the –
No, I was –
a whole lot of bye weeks.
Press box. That was a joke.
That was
right over. Right
10
over
healthy scratches.
Yeah, that's true. He's had like five bye weeks this season. To your point on McKinnon, 60 points is second only to Nikita Kucherov, who has 63. McKinnon's got 24 goals, 36 assists. So these are the numbers already that he put up his rookie year when he had his career high in goals and assists. So he's trailed off a little bit over the last few years. He hasn't been bad over the last few years. He just hasn't been worthy of the number one overall pick. He's going to shatter all of his career highs this year. He's going to shatter them starting next week.
How about him coming out, too, by the way, recently and saying, yeah, the Duchesne trade has helped us. It's removed that distraction. I mean it was clear that Duchesne, and he went back on it and said, you know, look, he's a good player, and he'd still be playing well if he were here, but everybody knew that he wanted to leave, so we needed it to happen.
I mean, Eric Johnson said almost the same. He didn't use those exact words, but said, you know, there were some of us that wanted to stay here and fix this.
And this is the thing. You remember when we talked about this a long time ago when people – Coyotes fans are wondering if the Coyotes might make a trade for Duchesne. Sakic put it out there that this guy was toxic in the locker room, and that certainly didn't help. It slowed the process quite a bit. And now we're getting hints of it from players who you rarely hear players throw each other under the bus.
Especially in hockey.
Yeah.
Unless,
you know, sometimes backup goalies who are playing poorly will do that to their team. But
that's it.
Or sometimes starting goalies.
Yeah.
But among the skaters... You rarely hear the skaters throw their teammates under the bus.
To see non-goalies.
But to hear that coming from, you know, marquee players like that, that's telling to me, because there's probably a lot more there than, you know, that's sort of superficial, but for them to even give you a hint of that, that's interesting to me. And look at what Colorado's done since Duchesne has left.
Yeah, they have taken off, and Ottawa has completely hit a tailspin. I don't know that I'm ready to blame Ottawa's tailspin on Duchesne. I think
they have
a lot
of other problems.
Yeah, we just talked about their owners.
Yeah.
But Colorado taking off.
I'm campaigning for Winnipeg to be the official playoff team of the Natty Hattie podcast.
I don't know if that's going
to
work.
And they're doing it because I like money. I'll continue to remind everybody that there's $1,200 on the line for me if Winnipeg wins.
$1,200?
Yeah.
That's more than you make in a year. Double your salary just to win. First of all, Winnipeg's not winning the cup, so enjoy that. But if you look at what Colorado has done this year in terms of off the ice, what they've traded Matt Duchesne. Yeah. What else have they really? They added Alex Kerfoot. They got Samuel Girard in that trade, but it's not like they went out and added some amazing piece.
No,
and now they're
it's their own younger players progressing again and performing up to the way that we all thought they were going.
Would you say they're progressing like non-linearly?
Yes,
would. Interesting.
He actually did already.
Except Mikko Rantanen, who is progressing very linearly.
Yes, he's been excellent.
Outstanding. Yeah, love that player. Yeah.
He's a beast. He was supposed to be a beast when he got drafted. I'm surprised he dropped to where he did.
They didn't panic, and I think that's probably the best way
Or panic. Sorry. It's back to panic. I can't keep track.
Showstopper Greg off your game? Morgan.
Did I throw you off your game?
I was trying to make like a pun, another pun out of this, and I couldn't do it.
No, I don't like where this is going.
Okay, maybe it was best to cut him off then.
Yeah, probably.
By the way, Winnipeg is doing this without Mark Scheifele.
Yeah.
They're doing it without their number one center.
How about that with Colorado? Colorado's won 10 in a row.
God. You and the Avalanche again. What is it with you and the Avalanche?
They've won five more games already this year than they did all of last year. That should be...
I know. Jonathan Bernier helped me beat you in fantasy hockey last week.
Yeah, and yeah, we don't need to talk about that. What about just the simple fact that nobody's talking about Colorado? You guys are ready to move on to Winnipeg.
I don't know. I don't think nobody's talking about Colorado, right? Plenty of people are talking about Colorado. They just went on like a 15-game winning streak or whatever.
It was mentioned that they won 10 in a row, but it really hasn't been talked about that much. Is that because of Vegas?
Well, no, it's because they're not the Blackhawks or the Maple Leafs.
Both of those.
Or the Rangers.
And also because they're just sitting in the last wild card spot with that long streak because they weren't very good before that.
Yeah. But I would say they're the second best story in hockey this year.
But if they lose, like they lost to the Blues, if they lose a couple games, they're out of the playoffs again.
No, I know, I know. And if they miss the playoffs, then it's just going to be, you know, whatever, they went on a nice run. But
yeah.
if they make the playoffs, how about this? Right now, if you were going to hand out the Hart Trophy, who are the legit finalists right now? MacKinnon, Kucherov, and then either maybe Tavares or Ovechkin? Are those your?
Yeah.
Those are the main guys, right?
Yeah.
Like Phil Kessel's having a pretty good year, but I don't know that he would crack that.
I think Kudryavtsev's in the conversation, but he's in a different tier than the other guys we just talked about.
Yeah, I think right now it's those four guys. Ovechkin leads the way with 30 goals, but Kucherov and MacKinnon 63 and 60.
Let me throw in another name that won't get nearly the attention that he deserves, but is doing so many great things. Let's throw Patrice Bergeron into that mix, even though he doesn't have nearly the points. Patrice Bergeron is a phenomenal player, and we never give enough credit to the other side of the puck, which is, by nature, just as important as the offensive side of the puck.
Yeah.
He is, without question, the best defensive forward in the game. He has been for so long. Look at what Boston is doing this year. He's not going to get the votes. This is not the way voters think, but Patrice Bergeron is one of the best players in the league.
Since we're talking about Boston real quick, even though we're in a different division.
Sorry. You're the one that brought up the MVP, Luke, so I'm just going along with you with thread
here. I think it's an important conversation when we're talking about the best players in the NHL. Brad Marchand suspended for 5 games. Didn't he say he was never getting suspended again or he wasn't going to play again?
I think he told me that very thing, that he changed his ways. And did I have a line in the story where I said he said it with a straight face? I think I might have said
probably.
That, actually.
That sounds like something you would say.
Yeah, I think I did write that. And here he is suspended again. So, I mean, it's just his style. It's going to make – he's effective playing that way. He's a very gifted offensive player as well, but he's just always going to play with an edge, I think.
I saw a stat that said he has now missed 19 games due to suspension in his career, or he will have by the end of this run, and it's cost him $900,000 almost. Like, he's too good of a player to need to play that way. Not like any player should be able to go out there and try to injure people, but it's that much more maddening when you are that skilled of a player. Like, Marchand scores goals, and he puts up points, and he's a major part of Boston having success. So that's our central.
It does seem to be in his DNA.
Our central division wrap-up talking about Boston. Why don't you talk about Chicago here for a minute?
I'm of the opinion that they just need to lose now. They need a couple years, just be out of the playoffs, restock the system.
A couple years?
A couple years, two years.
I told you, they got to get to that compliance.
Let's go 2 years. Let's do the Pittsburgh thing. I wrote this, by the way, if you had read my Sunday
column.
Have
the NHL rig the draft for you so you can get the
generational talent. Well, there's that, too. I'm expecting that to happen already. It's not really a question. But when the Blackhawks are in the lottery the next 2 years and get top five picks both years, it'll help restock the system.
You just got to get that to the lockout.
Nope.
And so you can compliance by all Jonathan Taves.
Bingo. We can
all be okay.
The Blackhawks will spearhead the lockout too, so they'll get rid of, well, you say Jonathan Taves, I think maybe Brent Seabrook goes first.
Well, but no, Brent Seabrook will develop an allergy to his equipment.
It'll be something else.
He's developed an allergy to playing defense.
That happened a couple years ago.
Can't use vertigo like symptoms because they really threw that out with Crawford.
Yeah, I think they would like Crawford back if they could. You can't – this is why you can't bottom out if you're Chicago. You're going to burn through the end of your window with Patrick Kane and
Duncan Keith if you do that. No, that's why I said 2 years. So you still have –
you can't waste 2 years right in the middle of this, though.
But, I mean, how many years did the Penguins waste of Crosby's?
A lot.
And they got back.
So you got cups plural, both of you.
Pittsburgh was in the playoffs, though, every year with Crosby.
The Blackhawks have greater needs because of Stan Bowman.
Okay, that's fair. But when Pittsburgh bottomed out, that was before Crosby.
Bowman too.
And also, for the record, when Pittsburgh got Crosby, they had like the second worst record in the NHL.
I mean, they had Crosby and Malkin still, so they had a nice build.
Well, they did bottom out before that.
Yeah,
the Milan Kraft years.
But yeah, I mean, Crosby, Malkin, Staal, Fleury.
Yeah,
1-2-1-2.
Could have had Taves instead of Staal, but whatever.
You could
have. I don't think they're going to complain. I mean, like you just said,
Chicago,
Pittsburgh. Yeah,
I'm sure you're getting a lot of sympathy from our listeners.
No,
how many combined cups since the last lockout?
I believe it's six
in the
last
and Blackhawks.
Is that right? Six, yes. But it's different. If Chicago were to bottom out right now, they have good players. They'd be wasting years of their career. When Pittsburgh bottomed out, they didn't have anybody.
I got news for you, buddy. They are bottoming out.
Not Alex DeBrincat.
They're at the bottom of their division.
Yeah, DeBrincat's really good.
DeBrincat might be a Calder finalist.
Well, and we're seeing the sort of it is a sort of on the fly. I think they prefer to be in the playoffs while they're doing this. You add DeBrincat, you add Schmaltz, you add if Duclair can live up to his potential, you're adding skilled, speedy forwards to that group. So maybe that forward group is okay. I still think they need a little more up front, to be honest. But their blue line's an absolute travesty right now. I keep waiting for them to use some of that money, but maybe they will wait till the summer because you'll have, I don't know if Marian Hossa is ever coming back. I don't think he is. So you have that money and you have the cap going up probably $5 million this year. So you can do some significant things on your blue line this offseason so that in 2 years, the Blackhawks can make one last run at it.
Real quick on DeBrincat, 17 goals now. It has him tied with Yanni Gourde for number two among all rookies in the NHL. He's definitely climbing into the Calder race. It's very clearly Brock Besser and Matthew Barzal, but there's a third spot open, and only Besser has more goals among rookies than DeBrincat. Besser has 24. But before we call Lisa, at the right time, actually, what do you think of that line with DeBrincat and Duclair and Jonathan Taves that they ran out there?
I'm happy to see it. Yes, let's try it.
I think Jonathan Taves is probably pretty happy with that line, too.
There's a lot of criticism justified for Jonathan Taves' production level. He's a fantastic defensive player, still he always will be. He's a responsible player. He's got all those other ingredients. So I'm never going to be one to completely trash Jonathan Taves because he still brings a lot to the table. Yeah. But they do need more production from him. But on the flip side of that, look how much of his career has been spent playing with who's that wing? Who's the guy on his wing? He's played with so many of those guys where you're like, and again, that's partly Stan Bowman because they've had to trade guys because he mismanaged the cap. But he hasn't played with a lot of skill.
Correct.
So it's fun to see him playing with that type of player again. Let's see what they can do. Let's stick with it for a while. Give them a chance to develop some chemistry.
And that's something Blackhawks fans know more than maybe the rest of the league. And same thing that happened for many years with Crosby of their line mates aren't who you think their line mates are.
Sidney Crosby is a more gifted offensive player than Jonathan Taves. There's just no denying that. So he was more capable of making lesser players look good than Jonathan Taves was.
It is a good point, though, because I think people just, they look at Chicago, if you're not watching them, they're like, okay, well, it must be Taves and Kane.
On the first line.
Yeah. You just think all the best players play together. And yeah, those guys almost, and
they
Crosby
that,
and Malkin never play
in
together.
In Chicago, they call that the nuclear option when they play those two together.
I still think that team makes the playoffs. And I'm actually interested in watching that line. That's a fun line. They're 4 points out of a playoff spot. 4 points
okay, Luke.
Out of a playoff spot. So you're saying every team that's out right now isn't going to make it?
The Blackhawks are making the playoffs.
Right, that's fine. We'll continue down this path.
We need a friendly wager on this at some point. You guys decide next week.
We had the...
it's not going to be friendly.
The Carlson wig. We need something else.
Yeah, we'll think about that.
Loser has to ride the mechanical bullet like Saddle Ranch.
Produce the show.
Yeah, with an outfit of choice.
I believe Luke already backed out of one of those bets.
Luke did not back out of that
third
bet.
Third person now.
Luke offered to. There's a year long statute of limitations, and the person I made the bet with.
Like a bustier. I think you'd have to wear.
We need to get Paige DeMock
like
from
leather
the show
chaps
to clarify this bet.
She's not going to clarify. She can clarify that the bet was 3 years ago, and she never cashed in.
Once
Pittsburgh has won the Stanley Cup the next year, the bet's off at that point. All right, can we call Lisa now because it's actually 11 o'clock where she is? All right, we've talked about the first three divisions. Now we're going to transition over to the Pacific Division, and we're joined by Lisa Dillman of NHL.com. You can find her on Twitter, at RealLisa. Lisa, thanks for the time. Let's start with the story of the year, the Vegas Golden Knights. Your impressions of this team now that we're well past the halfway point, or at least far enough, where they look like the real deal. Is that fair?
Yeah, you know, they do, and as we've joked, everybody's been joking, you know, at every juncture you keep waiting for the wheels to fall off, the first sign of vulnerability, and then they come back stronger than ever, and as I was saying to you a little bit earlier when we were chatting, you know, I was there for their first three home games, and I witnessed their loss to Detroit, and that was the game, I believe, where Marc-Andre Fleury was injured. So everybody kind of looks at each other and said, "Oh gosh, this has been a nice story, but this is you know, Fleury's out. It's not looking good." And you know, how laughable does that seem right now?
Yeah.
You know, and the very next game, they, you know, Subban comes in and plays against his old team and wins, and you know, Oscar Dansk, and you know, the list goes on and on about the inspirational stories they've had there, and it really is. I mean, I know people have covered hockey a lot longer than I have. Say it's the most incredible story, you know, they've been witnessing in their hockey coverage, and I'm right there with it.
When you look at this team, Lisa, what jumps out at you as the biggest reasons for this success? We heard the league saying all along that this was going to be a much better team than any expansion team in the history of the league, and we kind of all rolled our eyes thinking, and looking at this roster, even after the expansion draft, saying, no way it happens. There are only a couple legitimate players there. They're going to struggle to score. What jumps out at you the most about Vegas in terms of its reasons for success?
You know, it is really interesting. I agree. Like everybody all kind of said, "Oh, sure, right? We'll see what happens." But you know, it's like they've been able to take players and you know, people have elevated their games and then some. I mean, like say for instance, like Braden McNabb. Okay, I think the fan. I thought he was an effective player. I thought he had room to improve. I thought he was getting better. I would say the fans did not seem to be crushed locally when he was claimed. But you know, look at him. I mean, he was one of the first guys they signed to a contract extension, showing, you know, and they kept telling me, you know, we really like this kid. We're very happy with what he's been able to do. And that's an example that kind of falls under the radar. And I mean, we can't have a conversation without speaking about William Karlsson. Yeah. And you know, everybody's now sort of looking at Columbus like, what were you guys thinking? Well, you know, Columbus wasn't the only team that, and I wouldn't say that they didn't give up on him. They were really put into a where they were going to lose some significant, and they had to make that choice. But, you know, everybody forgets his career in Anaheim. And, you know, the Ducks traded him to Columbus in a deal that does not look very good right now.
Moving off Vegas for a little bit, I've been beating the drum that all Anaheim needs to do is get healthy and they'll be a playoff team. Is it that simple, or are there other bigger problems afoot here?
No. I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, you have, I mean, where do we start? You know, first of all, the Patrick Eves, he actually appeared last night. It was the first time we've seen him in quite a while. They had Patrick Eves' beard night, which was kind of a cute little promotion. And he was on the ice with his kids, and he has an autoimmune disorder. So, I'd be very, well, hopefully, you know, he seems to have turned the corner. So, yeah, it started with that. It started even before that. They started this Vatanen and Lindholm and Ryan Kessler. You know, all these guys had surgeries. And then, you know, Ryan Getzlaff has a face injury, so they've gone a significant time without, you know, key players. They're top two centers. They were able to, they just kind of wanted to stay within range, and they were able to do that and then some. You know, I would submit because of this, you know, the quality goaltending they've received from Gibson and Ryan Miller.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Gibson.
They're an interesting. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You mentioned Gibson and the injury that he. We don't know how long he's going to be out, right? But I mean, even if they had to go to Ryan Miller for a little bit, that's not really a drop off.
He comes in. Yeah, I guess they should. You know, he's. We should kind of start calling him the closer. I mean, he comes in and plays the final 6:40 of regulation, doesn't face a shot in overtime. So we're thinking, okay, now he's going to face Patrick Laine in the shootout, and he stops all five jets. And, you know, he's been through everything. He's, you know, matter of fact, he's the 59 career shootout victories. And, you know, yeah, you bring this guy in off the bench, and, you know, that's very reassuring. I think they're, you know, I don't think it's serious. We will probably get our next report after the All-Star break when the team reassembles. You know, sometimes you can read body language and moods, and it didn't seem ominous or anything like that. I could become, I'm obviously no doctor, but he's been injured a lot. He's been injured an awful lot. So, I think that is sort of a concern if he were to be out for quite a while, but I don't think he will be.
Lisa, I want to ask you about, as long as we're on the topic of injuries here, a couple key center injuries to two other teams we want to talk about, the LA Kings and the San Jose Sharks with Carter and Thornton. What's the long-term prognosis on both of those guys, and how do you see that impacting these teams as we go forth here? We're at the 50-game mark, essentially. Those could be really impactful injuries for these teams.
And it always has been the case for the Kings. I was actually, before we talked, I was looking up to see what the date was when he was traded from Columbus to the Kings, and it was February 23rd, 2012. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, that could end up being right around the date he ends up coming back. It might be, I think they are hoping it's sooner. I don't think it's imminent by any measure. He's started to skate, but, you know, there's still several steps he needs to take to get back into the lineup, and that has really hurt them. I think you can see that a team can survive without a top player for quite some time. I mean, the Kings were able to do that for quite some time, months and months without Quick last season, and then the wheels fell off, and that eventually up with you because they're bumped up to another level that they should not be at. So when he comes back, you know, everybody kind of resettles into where they should be. And I think the loss of Carter has really, really started to catch up with them. I mean, they've lost last eight, and they finally stopped the bleeding, so to speak, in Calgary the other night.
What about San Jose with Thornton?
Surgery, you know, when you have a procedure, I don't know how extensive it was. They're not going to give us a lot of details, clearly, but when you have surgery, knee surgery at any age, it's a concern. I mean, I was thinking about him, I think it was over the weekend, thinking what an inspirational season he's having, and after and how he was basically playing on, you know, half a leg in the playoffs last season.
Yeah, it's unreal.
And then here he gets hurt again and looked like a real flukish play to me.
The Flames are back in a playoff spot right now, even despite losing, I think, four straight overtime games. What has been the biggest contribution for them recently? Is it Mike Smith? Is it more than that? What has changed with this team year to year?
Well, it's first of all, we could talk about the stick throwing incident, which seems to have galvanized them. I actually happened to be at Flames practice that day, where Glenn tossed a stick up, luckily into the empty stands, about 13 rows up, and he really caught the attention of these guys. And they haven't, I don't believe they've lost in regulations. Well, maybe they have. I don't have my records right in front of me, but they've gone on this huge tear. And they've been dealing with injuries, been out. He's probably going to come back pretty soon. But the real interesting thing to me is Dougie Hamilton, how he's kind of having a, you know, not a spectacular season. And then you guys will be aware of this. I mean, then his brothers put on waivers and claimed, and you guys all know about that. So people are thinking, okay, which way is he going to go? He and his brother are really close. They're roommates. His brother, all the driving back and forth to the games, you know, how was Dougie going to coexist without, you know, Freddie around? And they thought that it could be a big problem, and it's been anything but. His game is, you know, maybe it's just a wild coincidence, but his game has really elevated, you know, since Freddie moved on. it's a strange thing.
Lisa, I don't know if it should shock us or not, but Edmonton's probably not going to make the playoffs. And when you look at the way their contracts are structured, they can't really do a whole lot to improve this team on paper in the offseason. If you were running the Oilers, what would you do to make sure you're maximizing the careers of guys like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl?
Wow, you're really putting me on the spot.
Just be a GM.
I don't even know where to begin to start with that.
Well, they don't either.
Part of me says, okay, be patient, but you know, you're telling a fan base to be patient after such a long period of time, and you know, you frequently see this with teams where they take, you know, these big step forwards. You know, they came within a game of reaching the conference final. I mean, it was that close, so everybody expects the trajectory to continue, and it just doesn't happen. We see this so often with teams. You make this massive year over, you know, season over season improvement, and then there's going to be leveling off. But in this case, it's been, you know, a plummeting off the cliff type drop. So, and also, you know, they need, you know, they got incredible goaltending last season, and you know, to think that that was going to continue at the same pace was perhaps unrealistic. You know, I don't think you do anything out of panic. I'm a big Todd McClellan fan. I don't think you make a change either. I think you stick with that. In terms of what they can do with that roster, they are hemmed in, definitely.
All right, Lisa, we won't make you talk about the Vancouver Canucks or Arizona Coyotes, the latter of whom we talk about a lot on this show anyway. The not great prospects for either of those teams.
I'm a big Brock Besser fan. I did a big story on him, and I'm from Minnesota, so I always have a soft spot for players from my home state. And he's just a great kid, and he's just, you know, having a season that I think has stunned everybody in a way. Except, I guess, for people other than the guys that work out with him, they're not surprised. But I think the people that didn't know much about him are pleasantly surprised.
Lisa, we appreciate the time. Thanks for the insight, and enjoy the All-Star break, okay?
Okay, I hope we can do it again. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, enjoy all that work that you have to do over the All-Star break.
Okay, take care.
Right, see you, Lisa.
Thanks. Again, that's Lisa Dillman of NHL.com. You can find her on Twitter, @RealLisa. So,
you know, but can I interject for a moment? Because I think what she was talking about with Edmonton was non-linear progression.
She basically said it, yeah.
And they shouldn't panic or panic.
They shouldn't panic.
I wonder if Chris would have given her the bingo card for non-linear progression when she didn't actually say the word.
Yeah. No. Apparently, yeah, you have to say it exactly.
All right, let's start there then, Mr. Non-linear progression. Do you see that?
Jamie just got muted, by the way.
I will not be silenced. I will yell over this podcast.
This is my new favorite feature of the show, and I'm upset I didn't know it was possible until today. If well, Craig, I guess I'll ask you then, because Jamie's
out.
Do you think?
No, my mic's back. Wow. Okay, thanks, guys.
Just a lot of disappointment entering the room. Is that what you see happening in Edmonton, nonlinear progression, where next year if they just hold serve, they'll be fine?
No, because here's the thing. It's not that Dreisaitl and McDavid have been bad.
Nope.
It's that the team is garbage.
So what you're seeing is just non-progression.
The funny thing happened when Edmonton came here. There was a scrum around Todd McClellan, and the discussion from a couple of the Edmonton beat writers, and it was – it was surprising how innocent the questions were. Like, why do you think you're not getting production from the wings and getting so much from the center position? Which, I mean, to the outside observer, well, duh. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, because Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall are playing elsewhere. It's obvious.
Playing
but,
well.
You know, Todd McClellan danced around it a little, but he said, well, to paraphrase him, he essentially said, it's no secret that we have more talent up the middle than we have on the wings.
Yeah.
Wonder why that is. So that's as far as you can go as a coach without throwing your GM under the bus.
They've been given a gift, and they are absolutely not making the most of it. And I don't think it's Todd McClellan's fault. And I understand. We've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, but I will say that the three of us, one of the few things that the three of us have agreed on was the second the Taylor Hall trade happened, it was terrible for Edmonton. And the second the Jordan Eberle trade happened, Jamie and I were driving back from the awards show, and Craig was calling us. That was a bad trade.
That was a tire fire of a trade. That was literally everyone around the NHL could analyze that and say that's a terrible trade.
And that's interesting because you're right. That I feel like was met with like 90% this is a bad move. The Adam Larson for Taylor Hall trade I really think was like 50-50. There are times where I feel like we're the only three people that hated that trade when it happened. Now I know everybody in Edmonton hates it because it was an awful trade. But you have what most teams don't have. You have a true number one center. You have a franchise generational talent. And then you also have a great number two center who could be a number one on most teams. And you've put nothing around them. You've taken pieces away.
Mm-hmm. Seriously, I know I've asked this a million times, but literally, how many goals do you think Taylor Hall would score playing on Connor McDavid's line?
I wish I knew.
40. If he plays 40,
he'd easily get to 40,
okay,
right?
I'm just telling you 40. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say 60, but yeah, I think every year, if he plays 82 games with Connor McDavid, he is between 35 and 45 goals every year. I mean, that sounds like something I might be interested in if I was the Edmonton Oilers. You can find other Adam Larsons. That's never been a knock on Adam Larson.
Right, and that's the point is, if you felt like you needed to trade that player, if you really felt You know, and you'll hear this in some circles. Taylor Hall's a bad guy. It's funny how none of that's coming out of New Jersey, by the way.
No.
They're not having any issues with it. Mm-mm. But if you truly believe you need to remove him from the locker room, fine. But get value for him. He's a potential 40-goal scorer. You don't trade that away for a second-pairing defenseman. And I know they think Adam Larsson's a top-pairing defenseman. Most people don't. I don't think he is. I don't think he puts up the numbers or does the things that you need from that position to be a top pair defenseman. And that's part of the problem up there. Their blue line isn't good enough. You didn't get value for him, and you absolutely did not get value for Jordan Eberle.
If you're trading Taylor Hall for a defenseman, it's a top pairing defenseman that there isn't a question if he's a top pair. It's not, well, we think he is. We're smarter than everybody else in the league. It is everybody recognizes this guy as a locked in top pairing defenseman.
And they sold it to some people last year. There, I mean, they certainly sold it to the local media that they got a top pairing defenseman. Oh, well, look, the Oilers were right. Well, no. First of all, you don't judge a trade based on one season. You have to see how it plays out and what's going on this season.
And just because you're playing him on your top pairing?
Yeah.
I guess technically does make him a top-pairing defenseman, but if I'm trading Taylor Hall, I want one of the best 60 defensemen in the NHL.
Taylor Hall would still be a more valuable player to them on this team than Adam Larsson.
I thought you were going to say on defense. Just put him back there on the blue line and see what happens. Okay, that's it for the Edmonton bashing this week. I just want to go back real quick to the William Karlsson thing. I remember writing the story on Columbus. It might have been 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago when it was announced how the expansion draft was going to work. Lisa's 100% right that Columbus was the team, one of the teams set to be hit the hardest by that expansion
draft. And we thought Karlsson would be the
Karlsson
one that left.
The guy, yeah.
By the way, he had 25 points last year, so it's not as if everyone's like, oh, yeah, this guy. This is not Marchessault. This is not somebody that already was doing it.
Columbus
saying, you know
did
what?
The right
I can't
Absolutely
believe
right.
you let somebody like that walk or leave your team. He had 25 points last year in 81 games. He played the full season.
Columbus didn't make any mistakes. You just, with the way their contracts were set up and the young players they had coming up and the guys that were.
It would have been hard to justify them not keeping Karlsson over other people.
Yeah, right.
I thought maybe they would try to trade him to somebody. I remember one of the suggestions I was trade him to Arizona.
Yeah.
I think I said that as part of the thing. I believe my suggestion was it was David Clarkson's contract and William Karlsson to Arizona for a box of rocks. But
that would have worked out well.
But
for
you know,
Arizona.
But they've been figuring it out.
And
but
people would have complained they took on Clarkson's
contract. He has
contract.
More goals in a half a season than he had points in a full season last year. There's no way anybody could have predicted that.
And when you look at well, we've talked about this with Vegas. Okay, I think all of us agree now that this season is not a fluke anymore. They're going to do something special this season. I think they already have. But I think they'll do something special in the playoffs, too. I do think they're going to make a deep run. But when you look at a guy like Karlsson, that could be one of the ways you poke holes in this team for next season. Can they sustain this? And again, getting back to your theme of non-linear progression, will William Karlsson build on this season, or will he backtrack a little bit as teams maybe focus a little bit more on him? I mean, when you look at Vegas's roster, it's still hard to explain what's going on. If they can sustain this over a period of time beyond one season, God, it becomes even more remarkable then.
Let's go a little more in depth on Vegas then, because I know you guys both think that they're going to the Western Conference Finals. Is that fair?
It's final, Luke. Singular.
Final? Okay, whatever.
It's the NHL style.
Right. Okay, it's like offside and Stanley Cup final.
Exactly. They're very particular about
that. I want to read you. I just want to read you a series of numbers first before we go. And I just want to explain.
The question first?
No.
Okay.
I'm just going to read a series of numbers, okay? And these are point totals.
6, 9. 15.
78.
Sorry.
Six, then 61. Then this season, 56 in 49 games. That's Johnny Gaudreau. Nate McKinnon, 63 his rookie year, 38, and then back up to 52. You're going to see these. So if William Karlsson next year can even match or come within 10% of his point total, I don't look at that as a step back. No. I look at that as actually successful that he didn't take a bigger step back.
But
you're going to see that with highly talented players.
What I'm getting at is, even if William Karlsson takes a little bit of a step back, is what Vegas is doing sustainable beyond this year? Look, this is where I want to start. I know Craig thinks they're going to the Western Conference Final. I know Jamie thinks they're at least making a run in the playoffs. I've been a little skeptical that they are going to actually make a run when we get to best of seven series and other teams that have been there before have that sort of experience kick in. But the more I watch them, the reason I'm starting to be... I've never thought what they've done so far is a fluke, but the reason I'm starting to be sold that they can continue this into the playoffs is because of the style that Gerard Gallant has them playing.
Mm-hmm.
And they just... I mean, they just... They're all over you. And teams aren't ready for it.
They are. They are relentless. I will agree with that 100%. They have a great forecheck. And that obviously generates a whole lot for your team. It forces you to defend a lot less. You spend zone time. You wear down defenses. And they are really good at that. Right now, if the playoffs started today, they would play Colorado, right?
Yeah.
In the first round of the playoffs.
I'm taking Vegas in that.
You're taking Vegas in that. Okay. And then they get the winner right now of San Jose and Calgary. You take
it. I would take Vegas in that too.
So yeah, you got them in the Western Conference Final too.
But here's my concern. I think Anaheim gets in the playoffs.
Bingo. If they run into Anaheim in round two, I think that's a disaster for them. Because I think Anaheim's the best team in the Pacific Division when healthy. Now, they might never get healthy. That's the other element of this too. I'm just assuming everybody comes back and they're going to be productive
right
away.
Because they are still losing guys. I mean, they did just lose John Gibson, even if it's for a game.
So that doesn't always happen. And players don't always come back and, like, they jump right back in being as productive as they ever were. I mean, injuries linger.
Now, the flip side on Anaheim is even with the injuries, they're 1 point out of a playoff spot. They're 1 point behind Calgary, and I like Anaheim more than Calgary. So, and LA is only a point behind Calgary, but LA is going the wrong direction.
I like LA, I like Anaheim more than I like
so
LA.
LA is really going
the Anaheim's the second best team in the Pacific Division.
If Jeff Carter plays again, maybe I agree with Lisa that changes everything if Jeff Carter comes back in, because everybody filters back into their right spot. She's right too. You've seen teams lose a star player and they can sustain without them for a significant period of time, but eventually it catches up to them. And that's as much as anything, I think, what's happened to LA right now.
Yeah, it seems like it is catching up to them. You're right. And the Pacific, I know I mentioned this earlier, the Pacific has gotten a lot more interesting right now. They still only have three teams in the playoffs, but they've got five teams with 57 points or more. And right now, the second wild card from the Central has 57 points. So all of a sudden, they have five playoff contending teams with LA, Anaheim, Calgary, San Jose, and Vegas.
Yep.
And all you know for sure is Vegas is in. I'm with Jamie. I like Anaheim more than any of those other teams, especially now that San Jose has lost Joe Thornton, because that's about the only one of those other teams I'd put there with Anaheim. I still think the Ducks are dangerous, and I am buying in that they're going to make the playoffs and do some damage.
So would you put – okay, let me ask you this then. If you had Anaheim and Vegas playing in the second round and you had Anaheim winning, do you have Anaheim going to the Cup then? You have them beating the Central champ?
No, because I think
– Well, Jamie has to go all in on Winnipeg. He's legally obligated.
Winnipeg, Nashville, and St. Louis, I think, are better than any non-Vegas team in the Pacific.
If St. Louis is healthy, they're an interesting team.
St. Louis, again, you have the all-health Western Conference Finals. St. Louis versus Anaheim, who can stay healthier longer.
Yeah. I don't know who's coming out of the Central of those three teams.
I don't either.
If St. Louis is healthy. That's an interesting division.
I think
division.
Anaheim would beat Winnipeg. I just think we've seen that in the past. That style, their style works well against
Winnipeg. I know, and Anaheim owns Winnipeg, but that was, and this is, again, damning with faint praise, that was the closest sweep I've ever seen in sports.
Yeah. I agree with you. That was a terrific series. It really was.
But I still think Anaheim would win in seven games if it came down to it. It'd be a great series. The series now in the West are starting to look pretty compelling with the teams you have in there, because it's just so even, and the best team is so inexperienced as a team together. You know what I mean? So I guess what I was getting at with Carlson is the fear when you have a team that's going like this that wasn't expected to do this is, what if William Carlson, you get into a best-of-seven series and he's just off for a week? Like, he just doesn't have his game. Are they done? I don't think they are. I think they could win a best-of-seven series even with William Carlson not contributing all that much.
Yeah, they've been rolling four lines all season. I think someone put it to me. I can't even remember which executive it was that put this to me. I saw him in the heck was it? Anyway, said they don't have a top line, but it's like they have a bunch of second lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Rangers method.
Yeah,
from a few years back, where you had three second lines that you rolled out there in front of everybody.
It typically doesn't win you a cup, but it wins you.
It
playoff
can win you
series.
A playoff series.
It's tough to play against.
Speed,
like you're going to eliminate somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that it?
I think we're done.
Anything else? That was pretty comprehensive. All right,
it was remarkable.
Anything left from leftovers over there? I think.
So you took off his mic.
Checked out. Oh, okay. He left.
Checked out long ago. I think he's doodling on the back of the bingo card.
All right. For Chris Schubert, for Craig Morgan, for Jamie Eisner, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.